Hello and welcome to another episode of Convergence. I am Ellen Taylor, alongside my co-host, Michelle McAloon, who it's very nice to see you across the
desk. Oh, it's always great to see you in person with the soil of Fairhope below my little toes. So
I know.
It is good. It's good to be back in the United States.
Yeah,
it
is.
And be with you guys.
So this is a little different than your first trip when you got out from lockdown. It was kind of easier this time.
It was. You know? They're actually starting to open up, but they are 2 to 3 months behind in the United States. And when I'm saying they, I'm Germany. For people who don't know, I live actually usually in Wiesbaden, Germany, where it has been very, very slow to open up. Britain has now dropped all mask requirements and everything.
Right.
So I don't know. I haven't been back in Germany for another week, for about 10 days. So I don't know where they are at this time. But love the United States.
Yeah, I know. Love it more, States. Especially when you come home to visit.
That's right. That's right.
Well, we thought we'd take the opportunity now that we're both here stateside and we would talk about some issues of the day together, besides just me and you ranting to each other.
But that is fun.
that is fun. Good.
Yeah.
One of the big issues, Michelle, that is, we just can't get enough of or too much of, depending on how you feel about it, is this critical race theory. And I know it's bleeding over into European news because you've even seen, I've seen news stories where the French are saying, don't export that over here. We have enough of our own problems, so
right.
we don't need
even
that.
Even the Germans have. Yeah. Even the Germans have said, we're not doing this.
Right.
Yeah.
So this seems to be have grown from an American phenomenon. It's taken on a life of its own in the last 18 months. But we thought we'd be a good time to stop, dissect, and see how some of these ideas of critical race theory fit into our world understanding as Catholics and as Christians.
Right.
So
right.
we're going to start there and hash it out.
You know, critical race theory really started out of the 60s and the 70s, the civil rights movement. And it, where it found its original home was in the legal academic world. And they were not wrong. They were looking at the constructs of legal precepts and race to see how legal and laws were affecting our understanding of race, how race was operating in society. All of that was good.
And needed
to be done in the 60s and 70s. But then they added water and the dragon popped out and it has become unwieldy.
And it seems to be singularly focused. It seems particularly in the last year or so where every act that happens in society is attached to, there's a racial component to it. And so that stirs up the pot in many ways where maybe it's an economic component or maybe it's a political component, but it's everything is now seen through this prism of race. And we're told we have to measure everything through the prism of race.
Do you think it's race, Ellen, or it's oppression? Because if you look at LGBTQ rights, you look at transgender nonsense, you look at anything along those lines, it's not so much, I think, focused on race, it's focused on oppression. Who is oppressing who? And one of the problems with critical race theory, as it has morphed out of the academic legal classroom or environment, is that an oppressor is now seen in every corner, in every instance, in every movement. Whether that oppression is based on race, whether it's based on, you know, are you using the right pronouns? Are you using the right potty? Are you,
it's so true.
Yeah, it's so true. So I think that really, actually, the bigger question is about oppression and power, but like you, we were talking earlier, there's this paradigm that oppression and power is saturated in every single movement we make. And I don't see that as being true.
I do too. And it's so hard to untangle where the root of the problem is a lot of times because there's so many of these labels we have to put on it in order to proceed. I think for me, at least from a Catholic standpoint, critical race theory is asking me as a person to disregard the merits of an individual based on their collective being as part of a larger group.
Member identity.
Yeah. Right. So it's telling me I need to discriminate against, be disrespectful, be unjust towards a person in this particular group in order to satisfy the perceived gain from another group. But that doesn't sit right with me as a Christian, because as a Christian, I don't measure people on what group they come from or their past. Our Christian heritage tells us this person gets human dignity and respect because of who they are, a person, not a person of a particular race or a particular group. So that's one of the biggest stumbling blocks I have in order to even feel sympathetic to the conversation rising out of the critical race theory group, because I don't want to be a person that oppresses or unjustly chooses one person over another based on race.
Do you see what's happening here?
Yes.
They're talking, and I don't know, the people who, the mysterious they that are promoting the critical race theory, is there's a belief that race is something socially constructed, mm-hmm. that this is not something of God, that this is a group that has been manufactured so it can be oppressed. You will never agree with a critical race theorist. The reason why, or mm-hmm. I will never agree,
right.
because we believe that every man is imago Deo, in the image of God.
Mm-hmm.
That's the right. foundation belief of, and we believe that equality before God belongs to all people.
Right.
Regardless. So, but what the critical race theorist, when you separate it from Catholicism, when you separate it from Christianity, when you separate it from humanity, you're saying that our recognition, the human recognition of that race gives it value, and that is backwards.
Right.
We recognize the value of the individual because God has recognized the value of the individual. God has created that being. God, the end of that human being belongs to God. The birth belongs to God. Where the critical race theorists, I think, have very, very separated, are very, very distanced from that in saying that, no, as a society, we've constructed the person. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Also, they're saying, well, you're not allowing then for society to make corrections from previous mistakes. And so, therefore, we have to super serve this one group that maybe was underserved, and those are kind words I'm using, in the past.
Right.
So, but how do we do that in a Christian way? I don't think that critical race theory, to me, is the answer to that. There have been injustices in the past. We can certainly, as a culture and as a society, make those right going forward. But also Christianity, we don't blame the sins of the father on the and pass down judgment on the son or the grandson. And that's something done in like North Korean prison camp cultures.
Right. Okay.
That's not done in the United States
and
Western societies.
Western society. You know, this side of Eden, we're always going to have to struggle with oppression, mm-hmm. with the stronger dominating the weak. So it is as a Christian duty, as Christian justice, we have always have to look at our actions through the prism of loving God and neighbor. Are our actions enlightened? Are our actions built mm-hmm. upon that understanding that each human being is due equal justice, is due rights under God, because they are loved by God, because they are created by God. And I think you're very right. I think critical race theory, the problem is there's some things that are true about it. It's mm-hmm. like Marxism. There's some things that are true about it, but it is not applicable to every situation, to every instance, to every, it's, you know, life is just too complicated. And these are people looking for very, very simple answers about oppression, when I believe equality, justice, and oppression are worked on a one-to-one basis in families, in communities, and then into the larger nation. So there's this pressure from this worldview pushing it down onto the individual, and it's wrong. It's just, it's a man-made construct. It's without God, where we have to really work on justice, equality, and overcoming oppression is our one-to-one relationships in our families, in our communities, our parishes.
Well, that sounds good in your pretty little world you created there, Michelle. But some people will say that's not going to be enough. Just telling you as a Christian to love your neighbor doesn't mean it's going to get solved and
no,
it's going to solve the
problems.
No,
it won't. But but you know what? You have to have a mission. Mm-hmm. And that mission, you have to recognize that that is the mission. And then you go into the details. Mm-hmm. Are we treating everyone equal? Does everyone have both the rights and the duties that they're supposed to have? So I just think these are just oversimplistic. It's a critical race theory. It's kind of this big fancy term,
yes,
you know, and everything. But in the end, it's very, very simplistic. It's very, do you know, it's not based on reason or logic? And they fully admit it's based on storytelling and narrative.
Right.
But when you talk about storytelling and narrative, that doesn't tell everybody's story. That tells a few stories or a single story, but it doesn't tell a story for everyone. And it's about the critical race theory is about power and oppression. And it's interesting. They're trying to denigrate power and oppression, but actually what they're doing is exerting power and oppression.
Well, here we have a challenge now, because this is a great conversation, theoretically, to like-minded friends in a room, and we're discussing because we have the same Christian worldview on how we treat each other. But when you take this critical race theory idea, now it starts to go out into institutions. And here I'm finding a real problem with how it's being measured out, where you've got some universities coming in and professors having to teach a certain type of critical race theory thinking to students, or people are to stand up at the beginning of class and say, I am this and I'm depressed, oppressed because of that. So we come in and now we've got it in institutions. You've got it in universities. You've got it, let's don't even go here, Michelle, in the military, where the military is getting pressure from certain components in society to be like this testing ground for critical race theory. And that can't be healthy for a army in fighting ready form to have all this internal discord pushed from the outside onto it.
I think the only solution to this, and this mm-hmm. is maybe, you know, maybe a pie in the sky stuff, mm-hmm. but is going back to some very classical roots on the meaning and understanding of justice, mm-hmm. of equality, of how justice and equality are applied, looking at where it's done well, where the mistakes. But it begins a lot. It begins in education. It begins in reasoning. And that reasoning, guess where that reasoning begins? Imago Deo, that we are all created.
Right.
One. We are one. We are created equally and equally loved under God. And what this phenomenon is as much a postmodern, post-God, post-Christian phenomena. But I would also say it is the result of very bad education, too.
Oh, yeah. To think that this is going to be able to be taught in our institutions and you're not going to have discord come out the other side.
Right.
Because this is not a theory that teaches equity and love and an understanding or compassion for your fellow man. This is immediately you spot someone, you put them in the proper group so you know how to treat them. Good, bad, oppress, victim.
Right.
I mean, all of that goes on before you've even said, hi, my name is Michelle.
Right. As dire as it sounds, I think there's some very good things coming out of it, because you're starting to see the real pushback with people mm-hmm. like Christopher Rufo, who's leading the cause now. Mm-hmm. But schools, parents who are now more involved than they've ever been in public education are standing up and saying, we're not doing this anymore. I'm also talking to a lot of the Catholic conservative universities and colleges now mm-hmm. in the United States, and they're saying, we're not doing this anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think I think it's bad, but I think the pushback is more positive than the bad at this point?
Well, I think because we realized we were going to get to a tipping point if people of good conscience did not push back now and right. stop this. Because throughout the last, let's say, 2-3 decades, when this kind of stuff was drifting into first universities, then, you know, the public school system in large cities, and it wasn't really pushed back upon, then the floodgates opened and it started to teach. And now you've had people that were trained up in that, and they're running some institutions, and you can see that those institutions are failing in many ways because they're not teaching young people critical thinking skills or how to decipher, you know, how I should treat someone, how I should not treat someone. They are just giving them a list of this is how you feel. So it's like this push down of thoughts without the proper teaching them the skills and critical thinking processes.
Right. And it's, you know what, it's so ironic that it's called critical race theory, because there's no critical, there's no analytics really about it. And even when they, from the very start, they say, you know, we're not applying reason and logic, we're applying storytelling and narrative. Yeah. And you know what, your alarm bell should go off. I think it will be with us for a long time, the same way the vestiges of Marxism is. But most of society sees Marxism as a little bit cray-cray.
Yes.
You know, and I think they will see critical race theory going forward because there's been such a violent pushback against it now that we're going to see it as a little crazy.
In some point, but I feel, you know, maybe it's the pessimist in me some days. I feel like it's going to take us some time.
Now, Ellen.
I know.
Now.
You know, I went back because I was rereading Martin Luther King's letter from a Birmingham jail.
But you have to be classically trained and educated to understand that beautiful, beautiful piece of writing.
It is, but I don't think it's that difficult to understand.
It's not, because it appeals to reason and logic. Mm-hmm. And he does, and he appeals to reason and logic, and he makes sense. But do you know there's colleges now in this country that have banned the
letter?
Yes.
Really?
Have looked at banning that letter because it didn't fit into the paradigm of critical race theory.
Right, because he talks about how to determine if there is a just law or an unjust law.
Right.
And he goes into saying, which was really interesting, he says, how does one determine whether a law is just or unjust? A just law is a man-made code that squares with the moral law or the law of God. An unjust code is a law, Michelle likes that. An unjust law is a code that is out of harmony with the moral law.
And that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
The real scary part of critical race theory is where it begins from. And that's exactly what he is speaking about. It is not beginning from the moral order. It is not beginning from a reality of ordered intellectual virtue.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It is begun from a storytelling narrative of very anecdotal evidence. And there was a lot of it here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But taking those instances and applying it to the whole and thinking that virtue can be ordered to that anecdotal evidence. And it just can't. It's too complicated. It does. It comes down to individuals, families, and communities to resolve issues, to make sure. And that all begins in love.
Yeah.
It begins in love.
It does.
You know, everybody is a valued person because God loved them first.
Mm-hmm.
If God can love that person, I got to love that person. That's just one of those things,
right? Right, yes.
So sometimes I don't feel like that, but, you know, sometimes there's, you know, that's the discipline of order. But it begins in love. And critical race theory does not begin in love.
No.
It does not. So where you have love, you have order. Where you have order, you have intellect. Where you have intellect, you have a reality that is fair and just. So critical race theory, I think it's a lot of hammering and yammering.
Yeah.
And there's some reality to it. But I think again, it's always going to come down to our one-to-one relationships and how we, you know, every single relationship is important. Every mm-hmm. single relationship. I got mad at a waitress the other day and I'm thinking, what am I doing here? You know, so.
Well, too, also, as something like this might have where good comes out of something bad,
mm-hmm.
this is forcing American parents to really see what their schools are teaching their children.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I think I think this is really, I think there's more positive, actually, than bad coming out of this, because I think parents now have the gumption to stand up and say, you know what, we're done. You know, fun spelled backwards. Enough, right?
Right.
So,
and that, and two, on top of the pandemic, which forced children to be at home learning on Zoom.
Right.
And parents over their shoulder listening to what was being taught to them. And then acquiring this over a year, and they're saying, wait, I'm not happy with the content. I'm not happy, you know, don't even get to, you know, you're going to make my kid, when they finally come back, wear a mask in a classroom.
Right.
And not play with friends. So there's a lot of pushback. Not only that, when we talked about Martin Luther King talking about unjust laws, there's been kind of this opening of eyes to various unjust laws or dictates that society has kind of pushed on us, that we were all just kind of really busy doing other things to pay attention to. And what I'm seeing, in addition to this critical race theory, is other areas of the culture where the eyes have been opened and said, is this really the society we want to be, the government that we want to have? So I think it's broadening the question. Critical race theory is probably the most visible question that we've had thrown from the culture and the law. But it's opening a lot of other issues, too.
I do. I don't, you know, goodness comes out of crisis sometimes and out of chaos. And I think it's really up to Catholics now and people, Christians of goodwill, to learn what's going on, to set the example of love, of justice, and of equality. Because you know what? That is what the founder, I think his name's Jesus Christ, commanded us to do.
Oh, yeah.
It's, I mean, you know what? There's no gray area there.
Right.
Love God, love neighbor. That one's pretty straightforward. You know? So
I think, too, this busyness that we've had in American life of being hamsters on the wheel, go, go, go. And we were so busy, I think, in so many ways, going, producing, acquiring, that we weren't really concerned at these things that, oh, somebody else will handle that. That's what the county commission's for. That's what the school board's for, or something like that. And we just let slide because we were all busy.
Right. I think the most radical thing that has come out and will come out, and we look, when we look back 10 years from now, is how COVID changed our system of education, of how we became more involved in that educational system. So God does not leave us without tools. We the sin of COVID, and it was, it's this post-Edenic, post-Eden reality. But as human beings that are in love with Christ, in love with God, we have the talent and the tools to lead our, to help lead ourselves and others out of the chaos. And hopefully that will be the story, the ultimate story in COVID, and not, I mean, it's been a very silly year, very, very silly. And 2021 is still, it's getting even sillier. So
we look back in 2020. Oh, well, things will be better next year.
Yeah, I know. So,
oh, yeah. Next year will be way better, Michelle.
Right. It just keeps getting sillier and sillier. But
yeah.
on that note, you know what? Things, there's the LAVE movement in the United States is probably the strongest it has been in decades of people taking up the mantle, taking up responsibility, evangelizing, creating, working. So good and bad.
It is. And it's true because, you know, working on this edge of Catholic media, there's a lot of good writers out there. There's a lot of critical thinkers. There's a lot of people that love the Lord and want to use their what skills they have in order to evangelize.
Right.
We think about evangelizing as dusting off your sandals and, you know, going out to preach the gospel. But it's also using your skills where you are at and sharing the gospel in that way, whether it's through great writing or Catholic artist or architecture or any of those elements that bring beauty to life. We have to bring beauty back to our lives.
Oh, absolutely.
Here.
We have to order our reality back to beauty. And that is, it's so, so important. And I Austin Roos wrote a book recently, There's No Finer Time to Be a Faithful Catholic. And I think now there's this, we have a Saint Benedict, you know, a Saint Dominic, a Saint Francis, a Saint Clare, a Saint Catherine of Siena. We are now those people, and we are called to be those people now.
Yeah, it is true. And then just be that little light in your family, in whatever capacity that you're needed to be, because so many of us have families that have strayed away and have not looked at a need to have a faith life because they're busy out doing worldly things. And this time from COVID, covering these issues of critical race theory, it has made us realize, no, we got to go back to our roots of who we are, who we were made for. And from that, we will build back a better society, not whatever crazy thing they're going to concoct in a lab.
Right. One relationship at a time. That's how it's won.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well, Michelle, it was great catching up with you in person.
As always.
Well, we better record a few more while you're here in the States. You're listening to Convergence. You can catch the podcast on Archangel Radio, also wherever your favorite podcasts are found. For Michelle McAloon, I'm Ellen Taylor. Have a great day.
Bye, Miss Ellen.